So can we picture this story? There's a lot of people in this story with whom we can identify. We've got this synagogue leader, Jairus. Now understand, in the time of Jesus, this is a hugely politically divisive thing that Jesus is doing and religiously divisive thing that Jesus is doing. And so people are starting to divide into camps. And in case there's any doubt about it, the camp that belongs to the synagogue and the camp that belongs to Jesus are not in the same camp. This is one of Jesus' enemies. This is somebody who distrusts Jesus and his message. This is someone for whom Jesus' message is threatening, painful even. Jesus does not have nice things to say about synagogue leaders. But this man is hurting. His daughter is in trouble. His kid is in trouble. And as any parent knows, there is nothing that you would not do if your kid is hurting. And so he swallows his pride, and he not only approaches Jesus, he falls at his feet, and he says, "Help me. My daughter is dying. Help me." How many times have we, or somebody we know, come to ask God for help, despite all of our own prejudices, despite our own history that maybe the church hasn't been the most comforting place or the most loving place, or despite the fact that maybe we don't even believe in God, or we don't know what's going on, but folks come, and we come, and we throw ourselves down at Jesus' feet, and we say, "Okay, we're ready. We really, really, really need help." And so Jesus goes to help Jairus' daughter, whose name, of course, we don't know, but goes to help this young girl. And on the way, he gets distracted. He gets distracted by somebody else in pain, and in the meantime, the daughter dies. How many of us have been there, too? We feel kind of like, "Hey, wait a minute. I've been praying for this for 25 years. I've been hoping and praying. Jairus is like, I saw the Messiah first here. You know, he was mine. He was on the way to help me. And then this bozo walks in and says one prayer and gets whatever it is that he wants. And my kid dies." That has a happy ending for Jairus, but we've been there too. So much to identify with in this passage. And then we have this woman. We have this woman who's been bleeding for 12 years. Now, I wrote an entire research paper on this particular kind of uncleanliness, which is way more than anyone needs to have rattling around inside their brain about women's menstrual cycles and things in the first century Jewish thought. So I won't share all of that with you because it does get pretty detailed. But suffice to say, women's bodies in the ancient world are mysterious and frightening and terrifying things. Okay, they have power to, you know, like, make babies and stuff, and they do these strange things that men who write the Bible and are trying to figure out, you know, religion don't understand. So they're frightening enough as it is, and here's a woman whose body isn't working as it's supposed to. So that's even more terrifying. That's even more frightening. And in fact, that's even more unclean. So in the first century world in which this woman lived, she is essentially the uncleanest of the unclean. There are lepers that you would probably hang out with before you'd hang out with this woman. And I mean, I don't care how big a town she lives in. For 12 years, she's been the person you can't touch. So you know who she is, that person over there. Maybe it's contagious. Maybe it's not. We don't know. The uncleanness is contagious. We do know that because Levitical law says that any person who comes in contact with her is also rendered unclean. Any one person, not a crowd of people, any one person, even just one person, who touches her accidentally, brushes past her, well, now that person is unclean for up to 7 days. And if it's a man, a woman can't go in the temple anyway, but if it's a man, he can't go in the temple. He can't approach a priest. He can't ask for God's presence in his life. He can't do any of that stuff until he has been ritually cleansed and had some time to be purified. This woman is the uncleanest person in town. But she's in pain. She is in pain, and she's been in pain for 12 years. She's spent all her money trying miracle cures and paying doctors to try to give her some sort of cure, and they got nothing for her, and she is hurting, and she has not been touched by another human being for 12 years. Because anyone who touches her is also unclean. So maybe she's got a friend here or there. We don't hear anything about a husband. We don't hear anything about an older brother taking care of her. She may be a beggar on her own. She may have been bumped up against somebody accidentally, but she has not been touched by a person in 12 years. That's how hurting she is. She is that alone. She has no one. But she hears about this Jesus person. Have we been here? Have we been to a place like this where we're in so much pain and we are so alone and we feel like we've spent everything we have? Maybe we literally have spent everything we have and we are still in pain. Maybe we have been so isolated and we have that pain in us. But she hears about this Jesus. And she's going to risk everything she's got. Every social taboo. All the recoiling that must happen when she steps out in public, she's going to risk it all. She's going to press her way through this crowd. And she thinks, I'm not going to touch Jesus. He's too holy. And I don't want to make him unclean, heaven forbid, because I think he really is a very, very holy man. And I respect him too much to render him unclean. But maybe if I just bend the rules a little bit and touch just his clothes, just the hem of his garment, it says in another version of the story, just the fringe on the edge. If I touch just that, maybe that will be enough, and I will be healed, and I will be clean. So I imagine her pushing her way through this crowd, and I don't think she has to push too many people out of the way, because some people see her coming, and they jump right out of the way, like, oh, let her by. Somebody else is a tattletale, and is like, oh, she touched you. Now I'm not going to touch you. You got to go to the high priest. She pushes her way through the crowd, and she elbows some people who are now unclean, and she doesn't care, and she pushes her way through, and people are falling back on either side of her like Moses parting the Red Sea because they don't want to touch this woman. And she pushes her way to the front, and she reaches out, and she touches just the edge of Jesus' clothes. And it's enough. Just that little edge. And Jesus feels her touch. He knows something's different. He feels the tug. Ever felt God tugging on your heartstrings, telling you to do something? Jesus feels that. He feels the tug of this woman on him, asking for healing, receiving healing. He feels it. And he turns around. He says, who touched me? I bet he knew. But he had to ask, who touched me? And she bravely, very bravely, again, did she render him unclean? She doesn't know at this point. Maybe he's really upset because he knows that now, like his, maybe, you know, something's happened and he can't go into the temple and he's a holy enough guy that he would know that. And so she, trembling, comes forward and she too kneels at his feet. And she tells him her whole story. And he says, you will not be in pain anymore. Your faith has healed you. You are healed, and you will not be in pain anymore. And I imagine, it doesn't say it, but I imagine he reaches his hand down, and he helps her stand up. And I imagine that that is the first time that someone has taken her hand in 12 years. And bleeding aside, pain aside, that had to be the most healing thing in her life, that he noticed her, that he felt the tug, that he reached out to her. It takes practice to feel the tug. We're not Jesus, surprise. We are his body in the world, but we're not Jesus. And so it takes practice for us to feel the tug. There are people all around us, like this woman, like Jairus and his daughter, who are in pain, who are in need, and who will reach out. And we need to practice feeling that tug. Because if Jesus didn't notice this woman, she might have still been healed physically, but if Jesus didn't notice this woman, didn't turn around, didn't talk to her, I don't think her healing would have been complete. We have to feel that tug. We have to reach out to the ones who are reaching out to us. Because they may not even know how to reach out to God, and so we're like kind of the next best thing. We're the church, right? You know, we're the sort of body of Christ at work in the world, so maybe they reach out to us. We need to practice feeling that. I want you to do something for me. I want you to fold your arms, cross your arms, front of your chest like that. There you go. Good. Nice and comfy, right? Pretty cozy. Comfortable position, safe position, very safe. We know that, right? All right, here's what I want you to do now. Switch your arms. Put the other one on top. Awkward, right? That feels weird. Such a familiar gesture, but it's like totally wrong. It's backwards, right? That's what it's like. That's what it's like to learn to respond to a new set of things going on around us, right? It feels really awkward. It feels really weird. So people who show up in church on Sunday morning, They walk on into the sanctuary at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning. We know exactly what to do with them. Get them a bulletin, get them a seat. When it comes time, we do our little prayer time, and then we do our passing of the peace. We introduce ourselves. We do a real good job at that. Make sure they know that they feel welcome, right? It's comfortable. It's familiar. We know how to do that when people show up on Sunday morning. But guess what? There's a world of people out there in pain who are hurting and reaching out, and they probably aren't going to show up on Sunday morning at 9 o'clock. If they are, it's going to be a total accident. They're going to just have stumbled by. We might not know how to reach out to them. We might not know what it feels like to respond to their tug. We might not even recognize it for what it is at first. This past week, we had a tragedy in our community. We had a car accident, 200-300 yards from where we're sitting. 5 kids from the high school, the driver, Caden McKeever, killed on impact or shortly thereafter. And Tuesday night, that happened really, really early Tuesday morning. Tuesday night, everybody know what happened? They came to the place that they feel safe. They came to the place where you can gather, where you are always welcome, where it's okay to gather and to cry or to tell stories. They came to our rock wall and our lawn. Did we feel the tug? I didn't. I didn't know they were there. I didn't know that. They were reaching out. They were pushing their way through the crowd. They'd laid aside their prejudices, their past pain. They were risking it all. And they were right there, and they were reaching out, and they had each other. But they could have had us, too. A cup of coffee, some cookies. Come in, use our bathroom if you need it. Here's a box of tissues, or 4 or 5. We could have done a little better. I could have done a little better. This isn't us. This is not a you. This isn't us. We all could have done a little better. I don't read the local paper. I get my news from the internet, which is great. You know, it's very convenient. I'm very well versed in national news. But I didn't read the Times Argus on Tuesday. I didn't know. Thursday morning, I found out Wednesday night. Thursday morning, I added the Times Argus to the list of things that get delivered to my email so that next time we can do better. Next time I can do better. See, we have more opportunities. That's the good thing. That's the thing about God's grace. Thank God. Really, literally, thank God. Because it doesn't take a huge tragedy. It doesn't take a car accident. It doesn't take a high school class in incredible pain for there to be people who need Jesus. It doesn't take a tragedy for there to be people who are reaching out. But we have to learn to hear it. We have to change the way we think about it because it's not going to be the same familiar thing all the time. Not everybody knows that the right time to come to church is Sunday morning. Sometimes the right time to come to church is Tuesday night. And that's different. And we need to learn to respond to that and to hear that and to feel that. We need to learn to cross our arms the other way, or you know what? Actually, we need to learn to not cross them at all, right? So what are we going to do differently? There's still pain out there. This is not going to go away. There's a little shrine out there on our rock wall right now. And I bet you they're going to be kids. They're going to be adults all week long stopping by, adding flowers, relighting the candles when they go out or when the rain puts them out. So what can we do? Can we bring an extra thing of water for the flowers? Can we bring some fresh, dry candles? Can we stand there if we see somebody and just say, hey, can I wait with you a while? Can I sit with you a while? We're not trying to make them come into church. We're not trying to make them believe in anything or profess faith in anything. They're hurting and they are reaching out. And we need to hear and feel that tug right where it is, right out there. And further beyond in our community, there's pain wherever we go. Caden's not the only person who passed away this week. The McKeevers aren't the only family grieving. There are people who are ill. There are people who are lonely, who, like this woman, have been shut away in their houses for 12 years and who have not been touched, who have not been embraced. There are parents who worry for their children. There are children who are sick or are in danger. We need to cross our arms the other way. We need to uncross our arms and go out into the world out there with our eyes open, with our ears open. We read the paper. I'll read the paper. We respond to the people around us. We notice when someone's hurting and ask, hey, what's going on for you? Can I get you something? Can I give you a hug? Can I offer you a listening ear? With our arms not crossed backwards, but wide open, uncrossed, let's go out into a world that's reaching out to God, reaching out to us sometimes because we are the closest representation that people see in the world. And let's feel that tug. We can live outside these walls. We can live outside that wall. We can be the church that has no walls. We're already a place where people gather. We're already a place where people feel comfortable, where they feel safe, where they come when they're hurting. Hey, let's make something of that. They already know to come here. They already know that this is a safe haven. They already trust that here is a place to grieve and to find hope and healing. Let's give it to them as best we can. Amen.